What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws with monkey sounds in there and call it good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Twizday.
Nobody calls it Twesday. It's Tuesday.
It's a
Tuesday. It's when you go down to the Oak Tree and you get your $2.22. I think inflation has really crushed that. I doubt that happens anymore.
Do you remember the 99 cent Whopper?
Yeah. Dude, do you remember like...
That went on for like 20 years.
Remember how much you could get for $5 at
Taco Bell? Oh, that was where broke boys went to eat.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't have McDonald's money. We definitely don't have Burger King money other than them Whoppers.
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. I mean, I remember you could get, I think a bean burrito was 89 cents. Crunchy tacos were 79 cents.
Yeah.
Like you could, like for $5, you could do well.
I remember at lunch in high school, we'd go walk across the train tracks to hit the old Mexicali Express. And I think the bean burritos there were something like 59 cents.
Uh-huh. Mm.
Yeah.
And the street tacos, which are like legit street tacos, were 99 cents.
Yeah.
Like, but they were like,
yeah,
not Taco Bell.
They used to have like in Salem and Eugene. Can't remember where else they were. Bob's Burgers. You get a bag of burgers for like $1.50.
Love a good bag of burgers.
Like they were like 39 cents a pop.
Like the old Hot and Now.
Oof, yeah. Oh, didn't they have an E. coli outbreak at Hot and Now?
Oh, probably.
No, yeah. they had an issue.
Jack in the Box did for like ways back.
They also got
decades.
They also got popped for kangaroo meat.
Say what?
Jack in the remember
Box?
That.
Kangaroo meat?
Yeah.
That was somehow cheaper than beef?
Really packs a punch.
Holy smokes. Where do you go?
In 1981, Jack in the Box was accidentally supplied with kangaroo meat.
Oh.
When horse meat labeled as beef was discovered in their hamburger and taco meat.
Hold on. That sentence.
Yep.
That went a couple different directions.
Uh-huh.
Kangaroo meat.
Horse.
After horse mm-hmm. was accidentally. Okay. All right.
Yeah, the Jack in the Box had this. I remember this being
okay. I don't know what to say to that. Yeah. Like it's like, oh yeah, sorry, Jack. We got your beef mixed up with the mixture of kangaroo / horse meat.
Oh no, two different ones.
Goodness,
two different wrong batches.
Two different wrong batches. Yeah, so that was the joke when I was a kid because this happened, you know, right before we were born, and I remember like my dad always like, we're not going to Jack in the Box ever. He's like, we're not getting caught with horse meat.
Yeah, well, you can get that anywhere, apparently.
You know. So we became.
You eat glue. Go ahead and eat.
Never
eat
went down that
horse
path.
Burger.
So we became a very.
Oh, you never tasted the Elmer's glue.
You know, I went. Oh God!
Not once.
No, not that I know of.
Yeah, I definitely did.
That wasn't my little kid kink of doing weird stuff.
Dang!
It wasn't the Elmer's glue. It was the paste.
Yeah.
There's this place. If you're driving on Highway 26 and you're going out towards the coast, it's in Manning, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They have like this place where. It just has, like, a list of the different kinds of jerky you can get.
And there's, like, a good dozen or so on there.
And kangaroo's one of them.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I've had kangaroo meat.
Gator.
Pizza Schmitza, the original Pizza Schmitza, it's now a chain.
Mm-hmm.
The original Pizza Schmitza's in Hillsboro and Forest Grove, they used to have a gator mm-hmm. pizza. And it was really good.
Well, it's like perfect for pizza because it's kind of a greasy meat.
Yeah.
And so when you cook it on pizza, it gets into the crust and the cheese.
Yeah, it was good.
It's like a greasier chicken.
Yeah. And
it's tasty.
So I've seen that beef jerky place. I have never stopped.
That's the one
there.
Out by you guys, right?
Well, it's Manning. Like it's like you go past Banks and then there's Manning and then there's
I think it's a little bit
nothing.
For the Dairy Queen?
After.
I think
after?
They have after a, the Dairy I think Queen. They have like a mobile slaughter unit too. Where they'll come and do it like they'll do their jerky on site for you.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, if it's the one that I'm thinking of. Yeah, there's definitely one over there that does that. I don't know if it's that place, but you basically pay like, you know, $300 and they'll bring a mobile slaughter unit out and they'll dress your cow up or
I'm out.
Deer or whatever up and backstrap it, jerky.
I mean, that
jerky,
sounds
jerky.
Great. That sounds great if you do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a hunter or a small farmer and you don't have the capacity to fully dress your stuff, that's pretty cool.
What stops me from ever eating there is the movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. So that movie starts where there's this young couple driving in a car and they're listening on the radio to a local chili cook-off where they asked the guy, what's the secret ingredient? He said, well, can't tell you the secret ingredient. Turns out it's people. Yeah. And from that moment on, I think I was like, my brother and I were like 12 when we watched that.
Mm.
I'm not stopping at places like that.
That place does look kind of leather-facey, though, too.
Uh-huh.
It's got a vibe.
I mean, look.
And I'm sure it's probably great.
Yeah.
But Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, that has tainted my view on any place like that. So, I don't know, man. I have my radar up. But also, that sign, really intriguing.
Yes.
Like, you got like 50 kinds of jerky?
Yeah.
All right. Like, sign me up. That usually would be very intriguing to me. I love jerky. I don't know if I'd rather, like... I don't know how far I'd go down the list. Kangaroos are a pretty adorable animal, you know, but so are horses and cows.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the name of the place.
What's the most adorable animal you'd be willing to eat?
Koala.
You would be willing to eat a koala bear. So you'd be willing to eat anything because those are the most adorable.
Yeah, that's why I went straight for that. Panda?
Wait.
Koalas have the STD. Never mind.
Yeah, chlamydia, I believe.
Yeah.
That's what they carry.
Yeah, so never mind. I was trying to think of a cute small animal.
Mm.
It's the first one that popped into my head. But yeah, I'll
you could cook it out.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's a place that's called Exotic Jerky. Jerky Dynasty. They have an exotic jerky.
Mm.
Kangaroo, alligator, wild boar, ostrich, duck, camel.
Yeah.
Buffalo. They don't have anything. It's too. Oh, Dusty's bacon jerky snack.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's made for you.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, this one, okay.
Ooh, python jerky.
Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Dusty's roadside phobia would make him miss all of the good barbecue places in the South.
Yes.
See, but that's where I'm like,
that's also
if
the
it's
place.
Barbecue, I'm going to go.
Look, I
think what it is, it's like chili, and then for whatever reason, jerky. It's like, if you're talking... If you're talking divey barbecue or Mexican food places, that is the best
look, man, when I graduated basic training in San Antonio, I've told this story before in the sense of like what we did. I went and got my glasses or my contacts so I could get those stupid glasses off. Mm. Then we went to the Riverwalk so I could see people, i.e. women. and then we drove around San Antonio on the freeway, and they have the bypasses on the freeway. I can't remember them, the frontage roads. And you can get in and out of the freeway so fast, so easy. And there was this spot that looked like it was about to be condemned.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I went, that's it. And he goes, oh, that's perfect. We walked in there, and it was some of the best Mexican food I've ever had in my life. And I was like, yes, this is what I've been after for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Is just the greasiest spoon Mexican spot on the face of the planet.
If they're cooking outside, in.
Oh, God, yeah. If you see the barbecue or the smoker outside, that is a signal to
I don't even know why, but I'm in.
Rio's
ribs. Yeah.
I mean that, like, I don't go out that way anymore, but I remember when I was younger, you know, going out that way, and every time I was like, can we stop there? And like, you know, teenage me is like, that smells really good. And every now and then it worked with my dad, because my dad's like, yeah, it does smell good. Let's go ahead and pop on in there.
Well, that and then the Mexican place that was by there forever, too. I think they're closed now, but Lupe's Escape.
Oh,
that place was fantastic.
Man.
We do need a divier barbecue spot.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of barbecue joints are very high-end.
Yeah.
And it's like, good. Good, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Good. But give me something greasy.
Yeah. Don't forget, you're probably out there in overalls smoking this stuff.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, we've got one.
Vince Wilfork. If Vince Wilfork is not cooking out there in that parking lot, I ain't stopping. Actually, yeah, I am. Who am I kidding?
we got the place in Newburgh stores. And it's a super, it's probably just our two rooms put together. It's very, very small, but they cook inside and outside. But it's the kind of barbecue spot, if you don't get in there by like 5:30, 6 o'clock, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, why are you open?
What do you mean?
Like, they'll be open and like, they only have like two things left. Like, they'll like,
gotta sell those last two things.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Sell it all.
But you know, it's never the good stuff. It's always like, here's a chicken breast. You know what I mean?
That's why you got to go earlier, my man. God, there's levels to this thing. You know this.
I know.
What did you say?
It's tough.
Russ, did you just start talking and then just stop?
No.
No. I thought I heard something. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
that's talking food.
Man, that is talking food. It's really good.
We can always talk food.
Nothing better than a fresh sloth backstrap. Sloths, it just seems like a bad food. Unless it's slow cooked.
Oh God, that's terrible. What? Also, but think about like the idea of sloth. Yeah, it's got that weird fur.
Mm-mm.
But it's like it's like baby deer because
Mm-mm.
it just moves so slow. So it's not all like muscly and built up. But then again, they climb trees, so they are, actually it is.
Mm. Yeah. See?
No, I'm just thinking it's probably tender.
Yeah. Yeah. Not me. I bet it's very bad.
There's one of those cooking YouTube shows where they paid an exorbitant amount of money to eat like the wildest meats on the planet. Like they had zebra. It's like $300 a pound, and I'm like,
it doesn't sound good.
They were like, it's not good. There was a couple of animals in there, and they're like, this tastes god awful.
Yeah. You need the fat animals, they taste the best.
Camel's hump.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
People eat that?
Yeah.
Isn't that full of water?
Well, I was going to say, I'm sure they do, but never mind. I came in too late.
Yeah.
No, the people eat camel.
Wow. Yeah.
And eat a camel's hump.
All right. Well, we're just talking food. But where I really wanted to go with that is, where do people eat cheap food now?
Yeah, because it's not really food carts necessarily.
You can't get cheap anywhere.
Well, yeah. There's one spot. It's the big truck stop glass case.
You mean like the hot food counter at it? Yeah, okay. There's stuff that's in there on the roller behind the glass.
There's one. There's one in Tigard. There's one in Donald.
Yeah,
those are the two gas stations that I go to on the way here. And if I go in, like, grab my energy drinks, I'm usually waiting in a line of like 12 people.
Yeah, gotta get their biscuits and gravy.
They will. There's, I mean, people are lining up, and it's like people like it.
Yeah.
But hey.
A good point here. I bet a sloth would be faster if it tasted good. That's a good point.
Oof.
You know?
Evolution.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, like a jaguar in the jungle.
Yeah, kitties
isn't cooking it, though.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's not cooking. It's not cooking up that sloth.
Not just that, but I was thinking about, like, cats. Cats aren't good.
I don't know. Never tried one.
Well, I mean, like, big cat, like, would you, if you went on an African safari and you killed a lion, would you eat it?
No? I don't know.
Because, like, a lot of that stuff, like, when they do the big game hunting out there, they donate the parts to like, whatever
village
or city, town.
All right.
But, like, do they eat the, like, an elephant? That's a lot of meat.
That is a lot of meat.
Like, you're going to do something with it.
I'm not down with any of that. I'm not down with the big game trophy hunting. It seems like, I mean, either one, you're poaching, or two, you're not really, I mean, it's not like the spirit of hunting.
Probably got a little wean.
You know what I mean?
What do you mean, though?
Like, going out on a safari where they're like, we're going to drive you up to this herd of elephants. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, No. The guys that actually go out and do it, like, not on the.
But also the spirit of hunting is like, you eat what you kill.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
You know?
If people who just do that stuff.
Trophy hunting.
Yes.
Yeah, trophy, the big game trophy hunting. No. I don't know about that.
Look, if you're taking the, you know, the fur and the head with you kind of a deal.
Yeah.
But you're donating the rest of it, like whatever, that kind of thing. I'm ambivalent towards that. Look, I'm a hunter. I'm not a big time hunter, but like.
I'm not a judger.
No,
I just wouldn't do it.
It's the whole like just trophy hunting thing. That I don't get down with.
You want to go on an expedition? Try riding one of them lions.
I would be, this is maybe just me.
You're going to come back looking like beef jerky.
Here's how my stupid brain works. I am much more afraid to hunt a moose than I am a lion.
I don't know what that,
like,
sure.
I've had people ask me, like, would you go do the, like, would you be afraid of, like, hunting, like predator game? And I'm like, not really, because most, unless you're talking about an elephant, they're typically not that big.
I mean, lions are big.
I mean, they're big, but like...
Grizzly bears are big.
Well, that's different. Like, grizzly bear, moose, like that...
They're predator.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking like more like African predator, like big cats and stuff like that. Like that...
What you're saying is that you're going to hunt North American animal.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right, kangaroo meat. That's how this started. Yep. And let's get to the Blazers because, they played... like some beef jerky in parts of that game.
they got cooked
and smoked.
Boy, did the Nuggets let them just kind of sit there in that hot box and smoke. Ooh, for a while.
Dried off.
All right, let's talk about this. Blazers next on The Fan.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Portland Trail Blazers have dropped their second in a row. After a six-game win streak and winning 10 of 11 games, they are now losers of two straight, 146 to 117. One of the things that the Blazers had been doing extremely well in that win streak and that great span of games was they were playing phenomenal team defense.
Jokic broke that.
146 points.
Okay.
Oh.
This was not...
Dude, he scored like a billion points in a row.
Yeah,
without missing.
They were 11 of 11 to start the game, and that included one of those trebuchet, stupid, pull-it-behind-his-head threes from above the break where you're like, oh, God, that's got to be so deflating. And that wasn't even the most deflating shot he hit on the night. But this wasn't a game where I thought the Blazers rolled over and showed their bellies like the beginning of the season against Memphis, like one of those things. This was a team that just broke them fundamentally with what they wanted to do. Jokic was incredible, not just with his shot making, but every decision the Blazers tried to make to take him away, he solved. I mean, you saw, this is prime Jokic. This is fully actualized. All right, we got 30 games left. Let's go, Jokic.
Yeah, he went, I'm not going to mess with you guys any longer. I'm going to put you away, and we're going to do this in short order.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God.
They almost had an NBA record. They were almost one of the three best shooting teams in NBA history last night, had they not emptied the bench with 4 minutes to go.
Well, here's the thing. That third quarter, because I wanted to bring up this third quarter, because the way that they unceremoniously dismantled the Portland Trailblazers in the third quarter was incredible. The Blazers scored 37 points in the third quarter. Like, that was not a problem in the third. I don't know if I have seen this. The Denver Nuggets went 1 of 7, 14% from 3 in that quarter.
Mm-hmm. And scored 42.
And shot 64% from the field. They shot 64% from the field in the quarter and went 1 of 7 from 3.
Every time they tried to double Jokic, every time they tried to show him a different coverage, they exploited it. It was filthy. Like, that's when you talk about, like, Jokic being the best player on the planet.
Crazy.
Like, he solved them every single thing that they wanted to do. And
they went 15 of 18 on every shot, not a three-pointer in that quarter.
I mean, Jokic finished, what was it? I think he was 15 of 22. He was 2 of 7 from 3. So he was 13 of 15 from 2. Meanwhile, okay, he was 13 of 15 from 2, and Christian Brown was 12 of 14 from 2.
Yeah. In that,
that's insanity. Dusty, with 4 minutes to go,
yeah,
they were shooting 82% from two.
Yeah, that was, it was one of those games where it was like that throughout the entirety of the game, but the third quarter really just kind of punctuated how lopsided that thing was.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, you know, they went, you know, 2 of 4 in the first quarter from 3, 4 of 10 in the second quarter, but going 1 of 7 and still shooting 64% from the field, that means that they got whatever they wanted.
Yep.
I mean, it just was highlighted, underscored, whatever you want.
And the Blazers shot 54-50 in that period. They were 54 from the field, 50% from 3, 5 of 10 from 3, 13 of 24 from the field. Like, it's the kind of quarter that you'd be like, yeah, we're back in this. But, I mean, what they did was absolutely incredible. The Nuggets. And like I said, had they not pulled and gone white flag, the final 422, I think is what it was, they quite literally would have been, I think it's happened 3 times in NBA history where a team shot over 70% from the floor. That's where they were at.
It was nuts. It was a tough watch.
I can't remember watching a game where a team hit more insane shots.
And the thing about it, and that's the big one there too, is that, you know, DeAndre Ayton goes down in that game with, I think, what, the like the around the 9 minute mark of the third quarter, he went down. That does not look good.
No, nothing confirmed yet.
Lower leg.
It's his left calf. I was told he was getting imaging this morning. There's not a, careful how I couch this, there's not a fear of a devastating injury, but.
So Achilles.
Yeah, or like a torn calf.
Sure.
I mean, when I say torn, even if it's a strain, it's technically a tear. It's just, I'm thinking like a rupture. Yeah. That's not the belief right now, but it does sound like this, it's a real injury, and it's the kind of thing where.
7-footers calves take a long time to heal.
Yeah, probably 27 games worth.
Natural tank.
This is the basketball gods have said, you know what?
We shall reward you with Cooper Flagg.
You have pleased us.
Well, I mean, we don't want to root for injuries.
No.
Yeah, but, you know, the basketball gods are saying, all right, enough is enough.
An ethical tank can be yours.
Man, to that point, though, DeAndre Ayton, in his absence, is not the reason why all of a sudden the Nuggets came rip-roaring back.
No.
Because they were shooting, you know, 70-some percent from the field when he got hurt,
yeah,
or right around 70%.
Yeah. And the thing was, like, watching that game, I didn't think that the Blazers were god awful defensively. As crazy as that sounds, but like, just watching the game, it just felt like they just got carved. Like, yeah, it was like a team that was just locked in. Like,
I mean, some would say that that is bad defense.
But so often we're just saying it's bad defense and we don't credit the opponent, like, for being, yeah, so good.
You're not, it wasn't like there were woeful lapses in assignment.
No.
Which is something we have seen when the Blazers have been god awful on defense, mm-hmm, before. It was just, you weren't as good.
No. And to a level of just like, holy crap. I mean, that corner three from Jokic, my God. Power dribble, Sombor shuffle, one right leg full, just pull it behind your head, throw it up to 20 feet in the air, and it hits the bottom of the net, and you're just like, all right, dog.
That guy's pretty good.
All right. Like,
47-8. 47-8 for Nikola Jokic.
That's 40 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good.
They had 8 turnovers in the night.
And in 31 minutes.
On 15 of 22. 40 points on 22 shots. You can't get more efficient than that.
Yeah. No, you can't. Well, I mean, you could.
Just make bench them all.
Yeah, make all of them.
I mean, a 40-point game with 22 shots or less, I bet you that hasn't been done a ton in NBA history.
Full disclosure here, I turned that game off before it ended. Mm. It was not worth finishing out for me. Scoot
rolled his ankle, kind of a hop step into the paint. It again, careful caveating this, it doesn't sound like it's serious.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a run-of-the-mill ankle roll.
I mean, I turned it off after the fourth quarter had started and he was playing basketball.
Yeah. My one like eyebrow raise is, and you always kind of judge it by the player, how they react, right? He went down and he didn't do the normal like wince, kind of bend down, tighten the laces. He stayed down on the floor and grabbed his ankle with two hands. And nice. That's always like, he hobbled off the floor under his own power. But I bet you.
Is that great, Bob?
And here's the other thing. It's such a minor thing, but it's so stupid. They're also at altitude right now. It's just going to make everything worse.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where you're just like, of course, you know.
You want a bright spot? Delano Banton at the buzzer at the end of the first quarter.
Look, D.B. Hooper got on the court, and he would not be out-Canadianed by Jamal Murray. Got Jamal Murray tossed out of the game. That was fun. Little S-talk back and forth between some Canadians.
Oh, boy.
It was pretty clear what Delano was telling Jamal, too.
Yeah.
I liked it. Canadians, man, they don't like each other.
I don't believe I've heard the D.B. Hooper nickname. I like that.
Oh, really? You haven't? Yeah. No, D.B. Hooper is
Basket Ghoul.
A phenomenal nickname.
Yeah.
And somebody made him a custom jersey.
Yeah.
Like, with D.B. Hooper
like a wanted poster.
Police sketch,
yeah,
on the jersey, but it's Delano Banton. It's got the braids and everything. It looks good.
No, nice. He threw it on, and the Blazers social has it. When DeAndre Ayton saw it for the first time, he's like, "Yo, is that the new jersey? What is this?" And DA's like, "Yo, that's one of none. That's one of none, dog."
Yeah,
I was like, "Yeah, it's DA. That's one of none." I love DA.
This is a one of none,
mm-hmm,
right there.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
they've got one more tomorrow, Manana, yeah, before. Look, just lick your wounds and get into the break as healthy as you can. But
sure,
going in. Like, I mean, DA's out tomorrow.
Yeah,
Donovan Klingon had a nice little game. Had 21, new career high.
Okay, and yeah, that was something that was nice to see. Well, he was kind of forced into it, mm-hmm, but he also played 21 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked tired, but
that's the kind of end of it right there.
He also was wildly 8 of 8 is nothing to shake a stick at,
no,
especially when he made a 3-pointer. Take that, Ben Simmons.
I know. He's making more threes than Ben. The three is nice and all. I'm much more interested and concerned with his finishing around the rim because that's the thing that he has to be able to do consistently.
Because well, 8 of 8.
Yeah. And well, the big part of it was he had a post move, Dusty. He drop stepped and finished around Aaron Gordon.
All right.
And I was like, was it beautiful? No, but it was mildly under control and he kept the ball high and he finished through contact. And I was like, hey, there we go. These are the things we like to see.
Six of six around the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, no, we'd love to see it.
It's good.
All right.
Well, Blazers lost. $1 billion, 11 million, billion, trillion, zillion to 117.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the offense wasn't the problem for the Blazers. They still scored a buck 17.
You know what's weird? If you look back, if you ever look in the Blazers, like, all-time points allowed, a majority of them are to the Denver Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Because, like, back in the 80s, the Nuggets used to just run and gun, and the Blazers were like, you guys want to go to a track meet? Let's go! Like, they 140 is nothing new to this series.
A lot of 140, 150 games.
It's like weird. It's
from, like, 85 to 91.
Yeah. When, I mean, I think basketball had the same criticisms of too much scoring,
yeah,
not a great product. And then they said, all right, well, let's start muscling people up here. And then we went away from it. And here we are again now having a lot of the same complaints. Cyclical.
Not just that, that those era of teams, you know, that's the Kiki Vandeweghe going to Denver and after Portland situation. And that's the run and gun Blazers. And I'll always remember I had Terry Porter on Outsiders in the Denver series in the playoffs. And we were talking about playing in Denver. And the thing he said was, I don't care how long you've been in the city for. I don't care how much time you've spent there. Unless you live there, that first quarter of basketball is a miserable experience.
Yeah.
You are just trying to get through the first 15 minutes and then figure it out the rest of the way.
February 13th, 1981 in Denver, the Blazers allowed the most points in franchise history. 162 to 143, they lost to the Denver Nuggets.
300 points.
They've also played games of 149 to 123. 147 to 140, we all remember that game. That would be our overtime game in the conference semifinals. Mm-hmm. 146 to 117, that would be last night's game. 146 to 113, the Blazers have lost to the Denver Nuggets. 143 to 132. Goodness gracious.
Points, man. Points.
142-114, 142-128, 142-138.
A lot of 140s in there.
Yeah. I mean, they show up, them and the Warriors show up more than anybody else on this.
The Warriors list. One's a little interesting. Is it the Run TMC teams or is it the Steph teams?
Well, you can go back to 2 years ago when they lost 157 to 101.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was bad.
And then 88, 89, 151.
So the TMC teams. Okay.
Yeah. They've given up a lot of points to them.
That, I mean,
73, 74, they gave up 143.
Denver has the best home court advantage in the NBA. It's not close.
No.
It's why a team, like, for as much as Adam Silver wants to talk about putting a team in Mexico City, it will never happen. It will never, ever happen because of altitude alone, let alone security and everything else that you have to deal with. God. Because that basketball, now the football, soccer stadium is, I want to say, just short of 10,000 feet. The basketball stadium's almost 9,000 feet.
Mm. All right.
Like, that's just, I mean, you're damn near doubling the altitude from mile high. Like, that's just, it's insane.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right. 503-864-6326. You can file this one under duh. After Rust with SportsCenter. New Orleans Saints make it official. Kellen Moore, the pride of Prosser, Washington, is the head coach down in NOLA. Won a Super Bowl, never left the town. He's there for good.
Good luck with that New Orleans Saints team.
Yeah. Well, the good thing that he has going for him is that he has got a runway. He will have time. Moore.
If he doesn't have time, he's going to get paid.
Yeah, and he's got 30. He's they're only 36 years old, and
that's so crazy.
Yeah, what?
How young these head coaches are now?
Yeah, he's
36. That's nuts, dude.
Well, I mean, he was a coordinator at 29.
I mean, it's so like, it's interesting how the paradigm has shifted over the last 15, 20 years in coaching, where to be a head coach in really any major sport, the big three in North America at least, you had to grind. You had to show that you knew everything, in, out, up, down. And there's obviously an element of the good old boy network, for sure. But also, you had to grind to get that opportunity. Now organizations are going, not that he hasn't done 7 years, but getting those opportunities to be an OC at under 30. Like, you're seeing guys get into the coaching game. I mean, Dillingham in college, literally, you know, contributing to a college or to a high school and a college, you know, that's even more rare. But you're seeing this trend of organizations giving guys opportunities earlier and earlier and earlier, and it's kind of gone away from a lot of the older coaches and shifted to the younger, not even just college, but professionally too.
I think that that has a lot to do with the fact that the game, in the NFL especially, the trickle-up of the NFL, we talk about this with players all the time. Players are coming in more ready than they've ever been before, from high school to college, college to the NFL. They are ready and they have a grander baseline. You also have so many more concepts that you're running at the collegiate level that are NFL ready now. And it's not that you have to reinvent the wheel and learn a brand new language of the West Coast offense or the run and shoot, you know, because a lot of these elements have been passed up and passed along. I think with the younger coaches, it's also when you have a guy and you know he's the guy, you give him the opportunity or he's going to be gone and you're going to lose that mind. And sure, it doesn't work. But oftentimes it works with great success, having young guys be in those coaching positions. Like, it doesn't work in the case of Brandon Staley, who apparently is going to be his defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. But Brandon Staley was that young, hot defensive mind. The Chargers hired him as the head coach, and it flopped. But that was a head coach position where he wasn't even a defensive coordinator for that long either.
How weird is that dynamic? Moore working for Staley and now Staley working for Moore?
I don't think it is going to be that weird because I think they were both leaning on each other. And every young head coach has got a former head coach on staff that he will bounce things off of. Mm-hmm. What worked, what didn't, you know, how did this translate and not translate? What missed and what hit? I don't think that is going to be as big of a, because again, a lot of these guys also aren't red asses like they were before.
That's true.
Like, you wouldn't see, you know, Bill Parcells being Bill Belichick's, you know, assistant.
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen because, you know, they were older when they got those opportunities. Now it's like, dude, yep, didn't get it, but I was a really damn good defensive coordinator and you want a good DC. I've been there. I've been through a lot of this stuff. You were alongside with me. All right, let's go and run this thing back, and we're going to just basically switch our roles, and, you know, I'll give you any advice that I have, but let me just call the defense, and you can lead the team.
It's just an interesting spot. I'm trying to think off the top of my head of any of these other situations that are like this, and I can't – none immediately jump to mind.
I think there's more
– it's happened for sure.
Yeah.
But I just can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I think – oh, boy. I'm going to have to go back and check, but – I want to say that was the case maybe with Raheem Morris and Todd Bowles, but I'll have to go check on that. But I think if we went back and we looked at it, it would be more common. But I think what's unique about this is it's so close from Brandon Staley being the Chargers head coach, Kellen Moore being the OC there. I mean, it was 2 years ago. It was, or a year ago. Right when Staley was fired in LA, so now it's so close in time. Usually, you get like a 3-4-5 year gap, and then it's like, oh,
then come,
okay,
circle back. Yeah.
But Kellen Moore is the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and they've got massive issues. They're already $51 million over the cap for next season. You heard that right. The New Orleans Saints are $51 million over the salary cap before the league new year even starts.
Good Lord.
They have got a lot of issues. It's going to start getting cleaned up after this year. But I think this is why if you're Kellen Moore, you have to have a runway and you get him in now and you say, all right, we're going to get our ducks in a row this year. And then we can start ramping this things up as time goes. A lot of dead cap money will start coming off the books as of next year. And then from that point, you know, you have to hit in the draft. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You've got to make sure that you guys don't just hit singles. You got to hit doubles and triples in the draft. And that is not just in the first round. That is in the first four rounds of the draft. You've got to make sure you're getting players. Got to get those dudes.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this obviously with the turnaround, not necessarily turnaround, but the addition to the franchise with Philadelphia. We outlined their drafts just in the top two picks for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Their only miss, or 5 years, well, the only miss was Jalen Reagor. And boy, if they had gotten that right, sweet Jesus.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. But, I mean, organizationally, you just look up and down the NFL. Yeah, it's the luck of getting a Patrick Mahomes, it's wonderful. But the Houston Texans are the model. That's how you this is how you do it.
Yeah. You have to compile draft picks.
And then nail them.
And you have to hit on them. I mean, they did a good job this past year. I mean, Talese Fuaga, he ended up getting hurt, and that's not great, but
he's a dude.
He came in, he got hurt in the preseason. Yeah. And having him dinged up throughout the course of the year is just not a good thing to have, but it seems like he's going to be a good you have a really good offensive lineman, mm-hmm, that you can kind of anchor on. I'm looking back though, oh boy,
it's a lot of busts in their draft.
It's not, yeah, well,
not busts, it's just not, they were not getting commensurate value for where they were picked.
You know, a lot of it is your roster isn't making sense.
Yeah.
Your roster just is not making sense right now. And it's a really hard thing to do because of the fact that you have a bunch of dead cap. You're paying for guys that aren't even playing for you right now.
And this is
including Michael Thomas.
I say, yeah, this is the last penance year for Thomas. And Drew Brees came off, what, last year? His last bit of dead cap?
This year. And then Michael Thomas is on for next year.
Yeah. So But that's the whole, when you kick the can for a decade, it eventually comes due. Yep. And basically what they have to do is strip this thing down for parts.
Well, and that's where you get to, like, remember when Tom Brady was winning a Super Bowl for Tampa Bay, the Patriots had zero cap space.
They were paying for everything.
Because they were paying for Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Well, now they have back-to-back years. I think they have the most cap space, mm-hmm, this year. They had the second most last year, and they had the most the year before. Yeah. It comes back.
It clears up, but you do have to pay the 3 year toll.
But you've paid that 3 year toll because you had Drew Brees that kept you viable.
I mean, you won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think if you're going to pay for it for this long, you may want to win more.
But like the Rams, are they going to regret?
I don't think bringing up the Rams with the Saints is the best idea right now, because that may be the 1 year that they could have won their second.
I know. But the Rams, they only get the one. Do you think they regret any of it?
No, not one bit.
I just don't think.
Not one bit.
If you win a Super Bowl in a 10-year window when you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback.
That's good. That's fine. A good win.
Because look at how rarely it happens.
It does not happened very often.
So okay. If you get it, it's worth it.
Hey, something to keep an eye on here as we are inching closer and closer to the month of April. The state of Arizona is saying, hey, Georgia, we see you and we're one-upping you. Next on The Fan. Remember last week when we talked about the fine people of the state of Georgia are trying to take a shortcut here for NIL and say, hey, we're going to try to make NIL tax-free for our college athletes. Well, the state of Arizona is getting creative as well. The state of Arizona introduced a bill today prohibiting athletic associations from stopping schools from compensating college athletes for the use of their NIL. This is 3D chess when everybody else is playing checkers right now. Because as we get closer and closer to April, where the House settlement with the NCAA is expected to be finalized, and that would be that $20.5 million revenue share to go with student-athletes, there is an overwhelming feeling that they're going to try to cut out NIL in that. And state by state, Arizona in this case, is saying,
we don't care.
Even if you give them that rev share, you cannot prohibit them from earning off of their name, image, and likeness. Even if they have compensation, they still will be able to go out and sell their name, image, and their likeness.
Which, yeah. Look, between now and April, it's not that much time, but it's still a lot of time. people I've talked to think that that number is not going to stick. And so I think there is going to be some changes to that settlement before that final wording is agreed upon. And I wonder just what else is going to come out of that because of what you're seeing in different states.
Yeah.
Because you can't come to this settlement and have the government kind of be a part of it and then also have 50 different states have different rulings and different interpretations if you're going to kind of make this mandate over everything.
Yeah, and you say, hey, there's a $20.5 million pot. Whatever you get out of that, that's all you're going to get. Mm-hmm. That ain't going to fly.
It ain't gonna fly.
That'd be like telling a professional athlete, yeah, you can't get endorsements, sorry.
It's like, wait, what?
The hell I can't.
Yeah.
And
that's,
so
that's half the reason you go to Los Angeles is, yeah, the weather's great. The tax bracket's god-awful. But the money you make in endorsements in L.A., it takes care of that.
And you're also going to see this, like, hey, we can give you $600,000 out of the pool. But there's $4 million in NIL that you could possibly make here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big – that's going to be the way that it goes. And
yeah, you like when this first happened, when we first started seeing the let's call it what it is, pay for play.
Yep.
When we first started really seeing it, remember there was a quarterback getting $8 million, $12 million, and it's going to come down, it's going to come down, and it has come down. But starting quarterback, five-star quarterbacks, they're going to get $3 and $4 million. Like,
yeah.
The whole idea that that's going to come down and it'll be a couple hundred thousand dollars. No, those guys are going to continue to rake in literal millions.
We are going to see a smoothing of that because you're already seeing it with a lot of schools that are mm-hmm. getting burnt and they're like, oh boy. And it's going to take each school to get burnt
mm-hmm.
before they stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for high school kids, because these are kids who have never set foot on the campus and you're showing a little bit of desperation and you're going, oh boy, this better pan out for us. And sometimes it doesn't work out. That's recruiting.
Yeah.
Right.
But now the money's up front and it's being accounted for.
Yeah.
And you know what? Oh my God. I just had this thought, you know what the next advantage in those front offices is. And I'm sure the smart teams are already looking at it, or how good some GM is in front offices at allocating that money and how efficient they are with like working with their recruiters and getting guys in who overperform on NIL. Like, it's the same thing when you talk about in professional sports, like getting Denny Avdia on a declining value deal, like and having that quote unquote asset under a controlled amount that makes that's more productive than you get out of that. You're going to start seeing the GMification, the CBAification of college sports.
Look, college programs right now, the Ohio State paid guys to stick around,
mm-hmm.
right?
Remember, it was the most expensive roster in the country. It was a $20 million roster.
And they paid their guys to stay, though.
Mm-hmm.
They paid Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, mm-hmm. Travion Henderson, not to leave for the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the smart and really successful schools are doing. Everybody that just says recruiting has just come down to money, It still is, at its core, it is a relationship business, because Ohio State, Texas, Florida, Oregon, USC, they all have money that they're throwing at guys. Every single one of them does. Every single one of those schools has it. It still is a relationship business. And the schools that are sitting there and are overwhelmingly successful, mm-hmm. they are building in those high school recruits. NIL absolutely is a component. 100% is a component. But more and more you're hearing high-level coaches say, if it comes down to NIL, he's probably not going to fit in a winning culture. You hear that time and time and time again.
The stories that make the sidebar on ESPN about a player transferring again and again and again, and I don't want to do this sitting here with my USC hoodie on, but Bear Alexander has mm-hmm. been that guy.
Yeah.
It's 8 schools in 8 years between high school and college.
Yeah.
It's not a talent issue. Never been a talent issue with him.
Mm-mm.
And you just wonder, honestly, I hope the kid figures it out
yeah.
at Oregon. Like, legitimately, because he's talented as hell.
Yep.
And it's like, but you had that. You had the Jaden Rashadas. You know, you have these guys that hop around. And who was the Florida quarterback? Lagway was the other one. It was like, you know, he got a crap ton of money. And then there was that back and forth between him and it was him and Rashada, right?
Yeah. Rashada duped him and went Miami, Florida, and now he's at Arizona State.
Yeah, but Lagway got caught in between all of that, and he was like, well, maybe I'm going to be out, but then it got cleared. It was just like,
yeah,
there's so much of this stuff, and you see these over and over and over. A wide receiver, it's one thing when a wide receiver transfers from Troy to Oregon. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing. That's going up in level and getting more exposure, and like that makes sense. When you see other top 25 programs and these guys hop between all of them over and over and over again, it's not because they weren't getting tick. It's because they're not they're a little messy.
Yeah. Yeah, can be a lot of times. Sometimes those guys, though, they find their place, they stick, and they're really damn successful.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the ones you see constantly appearing on the ESPN sidebar. Not guys that are just trying to find success.
All right, we saw a debut last night, and boy, there was layers to it, man. I mean, there was layers upon layers of Luca's debut. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.